In today's edition, another talk with Nicholas Johnson, former Federal Communications Commissioner under the Lyndon B. Johnson administration, and now retired from teaching law at the University of Iowa, and author and maintainer of numerous articles, essays, books, and blogs. Nicholas Johnson's writings have addressed everything from personal rights for democracy, removing personal rights from corporations, electric vehicles, and more. His most recent article is "If Corporations Have Legal Rights, Why Doesn't Democracy?" or "Lawsuits Aren't Limited to Humans?" or "Who Can Sue?" Nicholas Johnson, thank you for joining us today.
I'm happy you invited me.
3 years ago, in your book, Columns of Democracy, you warned us about the dangers of America sliding down toward authoritarian dictatorships. In your latest column in the Gazette, you've come up with a new theory on how to protect democracy, so maybe we should approach it, again, slowly for our listeners. Not surprisingly, for someone who's been teaching the law for much of his life, this involves the law, so let's start there. The Gazette headlined your column, "Lawsuits Aren't Limited to Humans." So what on earth did you mean by that?
Well, normally, lawsuits do involve humans and also lawyers. You would normally have a lawyer who would be bringing the case on behalf of the client. In the case of a contract between two people, would be one of those persons who was disappointed. But not all clients are people. And that may come as a surprise to some of our listeners. Before the time of Jesus walking the earth, long before he would have had an opportunity to stop the lawyers with their creative thoughts, those lawyers conceived and gave birth to one of the lawyers today most lucrative source of clients and income, namely corporations. Now, what is a corporation? You can't invite one to dinner. They're really only just figments of lawyers' imagination. They're non-human. Occasionally we think they're inhuman. The Supreme Court lets these non-existent things into the courtroom as if they were humans, and that treats them as legal persons. As many of our listeners will remember, the Supreme Court even ruled that corporations' political contributions could be metamorphosed into the First Amendment-protected speech. But corporations are not the only legal persons like that. They're also trusts, foundations, other legal entities that may have humans as officers and employees, but are not as a corporation or other entity really a person. And so we have to start off with that in order to get into court, you have to have something that can be treated as a legal person, and you have to have what the courts call standing. That is to say, you can't have a lovely idea for a law review article and decide you'll put the question to the Iowa Supreme Court that you're trying to address in your law review article. They're going to say, well, look, you don't have a case here. You don't have a controversy. We're here to resolve disputes and problems that involve people or institutions that have a real stake in this thing. And you're just a law professor writing an article. We're not going to help you write your article. So you have to have a legal person, and you have to have standing, but the courts have been willing to recognize corporations and other things like that.
So you've mentioned legal standing and humans and other entities. What examples are there of certain kinds of corporations?
Well, corporation can be a small entity, can be a nonprofit. You're familiar with those. Or it can be one of the nation's 500 largest corporations running all kinds of manufacturing or retail or other businesses. But in addition to corporations, because that's not the only thing that the law has recognized as having legal identity and standing, ships from the time of admiralty law a couple thousand years ago, ships have been recognized as legal entities. They're referred to as her, and the lawsuits are brought by them or against them. And we have a whole special set of courts called admiralty courts that deal with if a cargo is destroyed or something like that. Another example that are people but are not what we think of as adults who would be competent to think about hiring a lawyer, and that's children. We have all kinds of different procedures and agencies and legal proceedings that can be brought on behalf of children or to protect children. And the court recognizes them as legal persons, even though they were not the ones who contacted the lawyer and they had very little to do with litigation.
You also mentioned a few other things, and I just have to, this is kind of getting off topic a bit, but one thing in your column just really stunned me. You mentioned that even animals can have legal rights. And I just want to quote from the Iowa Code Section 717b3. This gives animals the legal right to good nutrition, plenty of clean water, sanitary conditions, a shelter with bedding and protection from wind, rain, snow, sun, cold, and dampness, and professional health care. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and that's in the Iowa Code. Now, there are exceptions and questions about how you would enforce it and whatnot, but there's no question that what have been created here are legal rights in animals that they possess, and that for that purpose, they are legal persons. You can bring a legal action on behalf of your neighbor's horse who's standing out there in the field losing weight months at a time. You read the provisions there, and actually, you know, those are pretty closely identical to what the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights says are the rights of the human species. And I think we could do worse as we think about the inequality within our own country of persons, that we might at least start by granting the human species among us the same legal rights that we grant animals in that provision of the Iowa Code that you read. It reminds me of the time when I was trying to urge more universal health care, and it was obvious that we weren't going to get it. And so I made an argument, if we can't give it to everybody, can we at least agree to provide the health care for children so that, say there'd be prenatal care for the pregnant mother, and then there'd be unlimited health care as necessary for the child. And then when they turn 8 years old, we could just turn them out on the streets and let them fend for themselves. But at least they'd have a good start, and it would be better than the proposal back in merry old England that was done, of course, not in seriousness, but to make the point of how inhumane they'd been, that perhaps what they could do, Jonathan Swift suggested, perhaps we could just eat the young children, and that would be a way of disposing of the problem. So sometimes you can come up with examples that move legislatures and courts, and so that was what I was hoping I might do by suggesting that we give the humans in Iowa the same protections, the same as we give to animals. So,
well, getting back to topic here, you also mentioned, besides animals, you mentioned trees. There's a book called Should Trees Have Standing? And you've also mentioned the concept of standing for democracy, the concept of democracy or the type of government of democracy. So I'd like you to start explaining that. You've talked about that a little bit, and you've written about it in your book, Columns of Democracy. But I'd like to hear more about how this applies to what you're talking about in your most recent column.
Well, let me start with what you first mentioned, and that's the matter of environmental personhood. This is not well embedded in the American law, but it does exist here and there and in a number of countries. There are two rivers in India, for example, that are recognized as having legal personhood. In New Zealand, there's a river, there's also a mountain. Obviously, just like when a corporation sues, there's a lawyer there in the courtroom. there's going to be a lawyer there in the courtroom when you're talking about rivers and lakes and mountains and the topsoil on Iowa farms and so forth. Who's to speak for them? They need to be able to speak for themselves. As Supreme Court Justice Douglas put it, they should be able to, quote, sue for their own preservation.
So you've been talking about rights and legal rights for persons, we assume, and also things like animals and trees. How does your concept of democracy or the institution of democracy fit in here in terms of legal standing?
Well, the reason that I've included in the column and also in our discussion this morning the legal personhood of corporations and ships and children and animals, and now I'm about to talk about trees and mountains and rivers and lakes, is because I think that democracy needs to be included as one of the legal entities that would have, as Justice Douglas put it, the ability to, quote, sue for its own preservation.
But that's not even a substantial entity. I mean, you can see what an animal is, a human, a tree. You can't really kick democracy or pet democracy, or it doesn't eat anything.
Neither do corporations or trusts or foundations. We let walk into court and have a lawyer advocate their legal rights as a legal person, that they have the right to be in the courtroom and be represented by a lawyer. And so that's why I go through all these examples, because I think to just come straight out and start talking about how democracy should have the right to sue for its own protection, I think would leave a lot of people scratching their head. What on earth are you talking about? What precedent in the law is there for anything like that? So that's why I'm itemizing some of these precedents. There are instances in which mountains and trees and lakes and rivers have been given legal personhood in other countries and sometimes in the United States. And I think the reasoning behind it is that, well, with some native peoples, it's because they have a special relationship to nature and all of its elements and views them all as very much worthy of protection. But beyond that, it's that these are things like young children that are unable to speak for themselves, and yet they are being destroyed. When you poison a lake or pollute a stream or clear cut a mountainside. And
so even with these entities and even with the corporation, though, there are people behind them to speak for them. Obviously, a tree isn't going to show up in court and, I guess, shed leaves or something to make a statement. You have something, a trust or an individual or a group of people or a government or an organization. So who would represent democracy? Because I could easily imagine this getting into a situation where we have different views as to who ought to represent that concept or how that concept should be configured so it could be represented.
Well, in any case in a courtroom, you're going to have a lawyer speaking on behalf of the parties. And those parties can be human beings or they can be made up things like corporations. So there's not a problem with the fact that a lawyer is representing the mountain or the lake or the Raccoon River or whatever one it is that destroys the water for Des Moines. You're always going to have a lawyer in there. So you also then have the question of standing. Should this entity, be it from the imagination of a lawyer, like a corporation, or something that we wouldn't normally think of as somebody who could be a party in a lawsuit, how could a horse be a party? That we do have examples of that. That's my point. So with regard to democracy,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt here, but you can have some definition of what a horse is. And we have a classic definition of democracy, but who's going to decide what the parameters are?
I think we have definitions of democracy. It involves rule by the people rather than by authoritarian dictators. And this is a choice that's being put up to people all around the world these days. And there are forces that are trying to encourage the establishment of more authoritarian dictatorships. And there are protests in the street that are objecting to this. But it means you have representatives in legislative bodies. You have an independent and competent judiciary. You have a mass media that does not get assassinated or imprisoned when reporting what's going on in a community, state, or nation. You have voting rights that are constantly expanding to more and more people rather than being contracted. And so when someone says that the media are, quote, the enemy of the people, unquote, an unfortunate choice of phrase, that's an attack on democracy. We need an educated people in a democracy. And when the Iowa legislature goes from providing whatever it was, 60 or 70% of the funding for the state universities, down to 10 or 30%, whatever it is, that's a blow to democracy. That means there are people who would otherwise have received an education who don't. It means we have fewer educated people who will participate in the self-governing and electing of representatives than we otherwise would have. And we've had a lot of that during the past 4 or 5 years. Attacks on the media, efforts to curtail voting, make it harder to vote rather than easier to vote. Cuts in educational funding, recently from the Iowa legislature telling Iowa's teachers what they can and cannot teach. All these things come straight out of the authoritarian's playbook. This is how you move a democracy to an authoritarian dictatorship. And that's what's been going on in this country. So democracy exists in every schoolhouse and polling station and library and the what I call the columns of democracy, the institutions that, but for their existence, a democracy is impossible. You can't have a democracy unless you have these supporting institutions. And so attacks on any of those, we recognize defamation as a thing, that if somebody says something about you that is untrue and harms your reputation, and which may mean an economic loss to your business or profession, they can be sued for that. Your reputation has legal standing, and you can bring an action on its behalf. So I don't think there's a problem amongst reasonable people in recognizing the institution of a democracy along with corporations and children and animals and environmental personhood. Recognizing democracy as having a legal identity. So then we've got the question of who can file this lawsuit, because you do have a question of standing. And there's been a rule with regard to individual citizens challenging provisions of the tax code that has sometimes been turned down by the courts for lack of standing, that they don't have enough at stake to warrant taking up the court's time with their legal arguments. But I would contend that in some instances, any individual would have sufficient standing to file on behalf of the legal rights of the legal personhood called democracy. And certainly organizations being for it, certainly a political party. I think that if you don't want to grant the right to every individual, there are organizations that would certainly qualify.
Well, that reminds me of another column you wrote called We Are Responsible for Democracy. You know, different people are going to define their democratic rights in different ways. And I'm thinking of the people that stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Obviously, they felt something was under attack. You mentioned schools and universities, and I can just imagine a lot of differing opinions as to exactly who gets to say what and how that's configured. But you mentioned we are responsible for democracy, which by which I think you mean that's all of us. Give me some examples as to how an individual might approach this issue in your everyday life. What can you do to maintain a more healthy civic environment, a more healthy democracy?
Well, you use the word civic, and I'd start there as Democracy in America, the book first published in 1835, observed, and it's part of what the State Department sent me to Kazakhstan and other countries to try to create and encourage. And that is a civic society. And so civic society means people who come together on their own to accomplish things. It may be a garden club. It may be the League of Women Voters. It may be the Rotary Club. It may be your community radio station. But a society made up of individuals who are all working in their own way with their own interests to make it a better place to live. So in sum, there are a lot of things that people can do besides their effort to participate in a civic society. They can support an independent judiciary and teachers in schools and expanding voting rights, participation in political party or candidates' campaigns. But I think it's long past time that we grant democracy the right, as Justice Douglas said, to quote, its own preservation.
Thank you. We've been talking today with Nicholas Johnson, retired from teaching law at the University of Iowa and former Federal Communications Commissioner in the Johnston administration. He has written the book Columns of Democracy, about which he quotes from here, and a number of articles and essays found recently in the Gazette and on his websites and the blog from dctoiowa.blogspot.com. That's from DC, number 2, Iowa, .blogspot.com. Nicholas Johnson, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, Holly. Thank you.